Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back to Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Thank you again for joining us. And thank you, if you haven't already done so, thank you again for subscribing to the show wherever you find podcasts, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, Google, iHeartRadio, and also from Cannabis Radio and the Cannabis Radio app. So my next guest was with me in 2021 and actually represents the 4th largest privately held full-service global insurance brokerage in the world. That might have changed, but he'll tell me so. They're one of the first insurance brokerages to develop a specialty in cannabis. They're set with the goal of becoming the premier broker and one of the fastest-growing industries across the U.S. and Canada. And I welcome back now, the title's changed a little bit, the Chief Sales Officer for Specialty Practices at Hub International. I'm here with Jay Verdi. Jay, thanks for being on with me.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure is all mine. And yeah, way back when we already had it chatting, I'm still here. We're still standing.
Yeah. And we're going to go back to what we had talked about 3 years ago. And that was the Claim Act. The Claim Act, which was the clarifying law around insurance of marijuana act. And for those, just a refresher, it would provide a specific safe harbor for insurance companies that serve the cannabis industry. So as for financial support, there was also the proposed Small Business Tax Equity of 2023, exempting cannabis sales conducted in compliance with state law from the prohibition of 26 U.S.C. 280E, thereby allowing businesses to deduct normal business expenses. Well, the 280E distinction now is no longer a factor now that once the finalization of the DEA rescheduling is in place. We already are well aware of that. But either which way, where have we gone for any other legislation since then? Let's give a quick update. So overall, the Safer Banking Act, which was, a variation of the Safe Banking Act we've all talked about, Secure and Fair Enforcement Regulation, passed through committee last September, but has not been sent to the floor for a full vote. I don't expect it to be any time before this administration, before the election season starts up. And neither the Claim Act nor the Small Business Tax Equity Act have passed through committee. Jay, when you're looking at what additional levers are opened up for insurance companies to help service cannabis businesses, besides, we'll get to the rescheduling in a moment, but when you look at the throttling, the sluggishness of Washington, D.C. to do anything to go forward, even on the act like, the Claim Act or the Small Business Tax Equity Act, why they don't want to go forward with it, and how much has that really created a buffer or really just hold, put a wall against what else you could do for businesses?
Yeah, it's extremely challenging. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. Until there's some movement from some of the regulators involved, the insurance regulators, are really, really watching this closely, because due to the fact of the limitations of, let's say what the Safer Banking Act or the Claims Act would have potentially proposed to solve, there still is very limited capacity and very limited participation from the insurance carriers. Some of the most name brand insurance carriers that insure all types of businesses, homes, cars, boats, properties. Until there is some kind of movement from a federal legalization perspective, they're not going to be participating, nor are they allowed to participate and support this emerging industry. And, you know, something of, you know, rescheduling from, you know, where we were before to where we are now is monumental. It is very helpful in everything that we're trying to achieve as far as legitimizing this business and it being serviced as any other industry should be and can be.
But now we have this new change, this new wrinkle now into the mix, which is the DEA rescheduling cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. If you need any precursor on this, please go back to past episodes of Blunt Business and Grassroots Marketing since January, okay? Because we've really gone, even before that, but we've talked about this a lot. But from the insurance standpoint, now, does this, the 280E distinction is now out. And we also know that there have been companies now that are going to try to go and test the grounds of trying to get back taxes. Ascend Wellness Holdings, we've talked about them, trying to go ahead and request the IRS to re-audit their last 3 years of tax returns to try to go ahead and possibly get $10 million back of tax revenue that they were charged that they had to pay they could try to get back. But from the insurance standpoint, the 280E, does that make any change for insurance companies?
Yeah, well, first of all, good luck to all the cannabis companies, our friends and clients in the industry in trying to, you know, get money back from the government. I wish everyone well on that. But I am an optimist, right? And hopefully that does work out. And to answer your question, it definitely does, right? Because the ability for our cannabis friends and clients to actually become profitable and really save their bottom line and write off these taxes with the elimination of 280E, that puts their risk in more of a positive light. You know, from an insurance underwriting perspective, and in my previous life, I was a very experienced underwriter. I have the technical knowledge that brings to the table and what the process is of actually underwriting a risk. And the financial viability is always involved in it. You know, there are financial checks, credit checks, and really, you know, the more powerful the financial stability of a company is, the better underwriting perspective and underwriting light it is. So when we, you know, represent our clients to the insurance companies as, you know, the top retail broker in cannabis, we take that into factor and we feel that it would give underwriters a little bit more comfort, especially from an executive lines, D&O perspective, EPLI, and just providing capacity and really making your risk and your operations a little bit more attractive and a little bit more palatable for an underwriter to understand. So there's definitely positives when it comes to insurance capacity and coverage for companies that are now able to really write off these taxes.
With the distinction, I'm wondering, from a financial standpoint, I know there probably that we've talked with those that from the venture capital front, from the hedge funds, from the financial investment sector, that investors would be a little bit more prone and a little bit more conducive to start investing in the cannabis. Now there might be more of an opportunity that distinction from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 has been made. But from the insurance standpoint, I mean, is there anything that changes in the minds of the insurance companies as to the level of premiums or the level of policy that they're allowing to go ahead and give a company, like how much, what the size of a policy can be?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, since we last talked, the marketplace was very, very limited, right? And we're proud to say as advocates, we've been, you know, really representing the cannabis industry and trying to bridge the gap with insurance companies that really don't understand the risk or are unfamiliar with it, and with our cannabis clients who are really in need of insurance. So I would say that there is a little bit movement, positivity, as far as marching towards federal legalization, which is probably the ultimate goal or what everybody hopes for. And that has increased capacity. That has increased a little bit of interest. And, you know, as the market leader, we have insurance companies that necessarily were not supporting cannabis or not understanding it or not willing to provide meaningful insurance capacity, reaching out to us to say, hey, Jay, what do your clients need? You know, I'm interested in this. What can we see? We've gotten around the regulation. We know that it's not scheduled like heroin or fentanyl as a Schedule 1 would be. And it's more on, you know, the pharmaceuticals or Tylenol or steroids like a Schedule 3. So that gives them a little bit more comfortability. And that fixes one portion of the problem, where one of the issues were, even if they were allowed to write it based on their treaty exclusions, their underwriting decision makers, they weren't comfortable writing it, right? So that part of the myriad of objections or people saying that they don't want to do it because they're not comfortable with it, that has changed tenfold since the last time we chatted. So there are a little bit more optionalities. We're far from, you know, getting to a point where it would be like any other industry where you have hundreds of markets and you can just find the best price and the best coverage and you know, go from there. There still needs to be work done, but it has improved, no doubt.
But now what has changed in particular? Has there been any kind of changes that have been made to where we can get to a different movement into where we can go with insurance? I mean, have there been any changes at all in terms of what you've been able to do in terms of services since you jumped in? Because when we talked to you in 2021, oh, correct, that's when the cannabis practice really came into play for Hub International, for being such a large company. But have you found other avenues or other things that you're able to do to increase or open up more opportunities for coverage?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been around since 2019. You know, the practice group started with 30, 40 kind of members. I'm proud to say that across North America, we have 300 plus practice group members and have over 1,000 clients in the cannabis space. While we continue to barter and advocate for the cannabis industry to the insurance companies and providers and the powers that be, those reinsurance providers, we're not waiting for that, right? We're actually thinking about risk in a different way. We're looking at alternative risk financing. We're looking at alternative risk measures, parametric derivatives, captives that are a little bit unique in the traditional sense of risk transfer that really can help out some of our cannabis clients. We're proud to say that we have a proprietary Hub Cannabis benefits captive to protect your employees. And we're also looking at alternative ways of covering some of these large limits and large amounts of insurance that is required through, you know, innovative risk transfers. And that's something that we're very proud of, that, you know, we do have solutions. We're trying to get the competitiveness and the pricing down to where it does make sense for some of our companies. But, you know, some of our friends and clients have really took advantage of, you know, our innovative thought process to not just pay an arm and a leg for limited insurance capacity, but really thinking differently in protecting their balance sheet and their high retentions in alternative ways of risk transfer.
But are there any areas of risk that insurance companies like yours cannot help out with that are you're still trying to go and work on to help assist? Anything that businesses have already been asking about to help alleviate? Are there any areas that you feel like that you're still trying to go and help to bring that type of coverage to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a big craze about Delta 8 products and Farm Bill hemp-derived products that are sweeping the nation and sweeping different states for that matter. You know, you can get a hemp-derived beverage in a Publix or a Total Wine in some states, right? Mm-hmm. So that is a little bit of a gray area that we continue to have challenges with because, you know, the traditional insurance carriers are saying, this is cannabis. And the cannabis carriers that we have tremendous relationships with, they're saying this is not really cannabis. So it's a little bit of a fine line in a gray area. Excuse me. Another area where we've had some success and it's been a very big challenge at the infancy of it is our cannabis consumption lounges, right? A lot of insurance carriers and companies are really faced with the challenge of not a non-existent kind of risk where, you know, they're comfortable with liquor liability, but is there something that is being developed from a cannabis liability perspective that can, you know, handle on-site consumption? And what are the checks and balances in place from an underwriting perspective that would allow a company to really adequately cover this risk? And we're proud to say that, you know, a couple of states, mainly Nevada and Illinois, we've been successful in actually placing coverage for some of these, cannabis consumption lounges that are starting to pop up everywhere. So, you know, as the industry evolves, we're always trying to see what's next and how we can solve for that problem. And really, it makes our job and our duty very exciting because there's always something new and there's always something different to kind of solve a problem for.
We're going to get more into consumption lounges a little bit later on because we're going to get more into a detailed discussion after the break on what is available right now in the insurance sector for cannabis businesses. And what you're able to go and do as a business to go ahead and insure your cannabis business with the group like a Hub International. By the way, their website is hubinternational.com, hubinternational.com. Make sure to go and take a look at that as we go to commercial break. Again, I'm here with Jay Verde, Chief Sales Officer for Specialty Practices at Hub International here on Blunt Business. We're back after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back. I'm here with Jay Verde, Chief Sales Officer for Specialty Practices at Hub International here on Blunt Business. And I want to go ahead and point out to you, Jay, a 2021 report by New Dawn Risk. And also, this is the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, so quite a bit of information came from there. But as of 2020, well, actually, from 2020, this is before we talked, there were only six insurance companies offering cannabis coverage. Now there's approximately 30 as of 2021. I don't know how many there are now, but they talk about the fact about because the federal law surrounding cannabis, insurers and brokers did not formally advertise their services to cannabis-related businesses, or CRBs. Most owners hear about insurance options through word of mouth in the cannabis industry and the community, and when these businesses do find and obtain coverage, they most need to pay their premiums in cash, which presents another unique obstacle that most other businesses do not face. Now, what can you tell me about that part, about the way they are encountering and finding insurance companies like yours, unless they hear a show like this and they hear about, oh, there's an insurance company out there that's being reached out to, but you can't do any really conventional or traditional advertising, and what they have to go and be able to provide to you in cash on premiums. Is that still the same case today?
I would say most of it is still very similar. You know, the amount of carriers that are providing coverage or participating in supporting cannabis-related businesses has increased since we last talked. You know, depending on the line of business, I'd say about 30-40 is still correct, because, you know, there would be a different type of insurance company that offers workers' compensation. There would be a different type of insurance company that offers property and casualty insurance. There's a different insurance companies that offer employee benefits. And then also we do the retirement 401k and life insurance as well. And that's a whole different set of insurance companies, let alone the executive lines and D&O stuff that we talked about as well. So it's still very specialized. It's still very niche. And there are only specialty kind of MGAs, specialty E&S carriers. And, you know, those insurance geeks like me that are listening here would understand what I'm saying, where these companies are, you know, out there and there's more of them. But the actual capacity that is needed to cover a really kind of top of the line, top of the class risk that it requires a certain amount of limit, it's still not there. And we're really looking at insurance companies to kind of come to us and understand, if they want to learn about this business, what it really takes and what the business really needs in order to be a really prominent insurance carrier that's, you know, representing and supporting cannabis. Now, where do some of these businesses find insurance? Where we're a retail broker, right? Hub is one of the largest global insurance retail brokers. And, you know, by far, we are the market share leader when it comes to cannabis. And, you know, that's because, you know, we've been in cannabis and we have the expertise and experience since really the beginning of when federal legalization hit Canada in 2018, and even well before that on the medicinal side in certain states and in Canada. And, you know, when you talk about premiums, you know, we do have ways of financing this premium, making it a little bit easier for cash-strapped cannabis-related businesses to pay for their insurance premiums so that they're not dropping off a knapsack of cash, you know, as similar they have to do with, you know, transferring cash to their credit unions and tier two kind of financial institutions. So a lot of that has changed, where it's a little bit easier and understandable that, you know, this is not directly plant touching money that's coming into some of the professional services ecosystem. It's really supporting it from an ancillary standpoint where, you know, we're not cannabis growers at Hub International, right? We are risk managers and protect your business and balance sheet and your employees. So, you know, it has changed and it has gotten a lot better since the last time we talked because of some of those things that I have mentioned.
But now let me ask you about the change, where it was the cannabis practice for Hub International, but now you have specialty practices. Are there other sectors now that fall in the same vein as cannabis that also need these kind of parameters that are put in place where premiums are put in cash? Because I would imagine for cannabis, the premiums are put in advance in cash because of the banking issues, where they're not able to go and provide any kind of checking or credit at, from a financial institution to go ahead and take care of that. But are there other practices now, since you had that specialty practice distinction, what would that also, cannabis is being applied under what other avenue at Hub International?
Yeah. And, you know, people, our friends and clients in the cannabis industry are very smart, right? They have thought of different ways of flowing cash through trusts, through real estate, structures, through different businesses that are set up. So there is always a way, without breaking the law, obviously, to really kind of transfer money. And you have to get really creative with it, right? And until, you know, there are some limitations that the government has put on, that's going to continue to happen. People are going to have to be creative in the way they kind of transfer money, especially anything to do with cannabis-related businesses. For our specialty practices, a clear distinction is we have specialty expertise in many different verticals, right? In the traditional verticals such as transportation, such as real estate, such as hospitality, such as healthcare, and cannabis. And some of the more emerging ones do fall under, these specialty practices as well. We've had some success north of the border in Canada and in the U.S. on some psychedelics companies that are raising money and going through clinical trials. We've also had some success in, cryptocurrencies and blockchain. So a lot of these things that are really nuanced when it comes to a federal legal perspective or a lack of experience, that really falls under, the emerging markets and specialty practices group as well. And we take a lot of pride in being at the forefront and being innovative and trying to provide these solutions for these truly underserved industries.
Right. Now, let's go to another part about this new Dawn Risk Report. They address inadequate policy limits on coverage. So most insurers are offering $1 million per occurrence or $2 million aggregate policies in commercial and general liability. This might have changed since then, but we're just bringing this down as a measuring stick. They also said that insureds may need limits up to $5 and $10 million or more. So what can you tell me about the current policy limits on coverage? Because they're trying to say that it's inadequate, but what is it that you're saying right now that you're able to, at the high?
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
I extend, what is available for policy coverage for clients of yours?
Yeah, and I'm proud to say that, a lot has changed and evolved since the last time we talked. And there are limits available, although very limited, where we can get up to $5 to $10 million or more. The only hindrance to that is that there's a cost associated with it, right? So for cannabis companies that are cash strapped because they're getting taxed up the yin yang and there's regulatory fees and costs associated with that. And then let alone, with the 280E in obviously previous to the rescheduling kind of initiative here, they weren't allowed to write off any tax. They were very cash strapped. And so we have a lot of our friends and clients that come to us and say, look, Jay, we need an adequate protection plan, a risk mitigation strategy. We come up and develop a plan and present it to them. And then, when there is that initial sticker shock or there is that number crunching budgetary mindset where we say, what is my risk versus reward? A lot of our companies are just so cash strapped that they have to just tick the minimum box. So whatever is required of them to operate their business, they're buying the minimum amount. But to say that, $5 and $10 million is available, I'm really proud to say that, that is available now. It's just a matter of, what the costs are that are associated with making that decision for protecting your business.
We're going to go back to another commercial break. When we come back, we want to go and talk about now the understanding of the market for cannabis insurance. This was a 2023 report that the National Association of Insurance Commissioners put out. And we're going to talk about what they found out as their findings of this, which are interesting in terms of, we talked about cannabis consumption lounges. We're going to go and jump onto that. And also the possibility of interstate commerce. I'm here again with Jay Verde, Chief Sales Officer for Specialty Practices at Hub International. And we're back with final questions after this.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
We're rounding the home stretch right now with Jay Verde, Chief Sales Officer for Specialty Practices at Hub International. A quick distinction, hubinternational.com/cannabis. So you want to go into the cannabis practices and you want to work with folks like Jay and his team, hubinternational.com, hub/cannabis. Make sure to go and check that out for yourselves and see what they can do for you. Now, the other thing I want to make mention of before we get into the talk about the National Association of Commissioners 2023 report on understanding the cannabis market. Unfortunately, this episode is going to run after an event you have at the end of June. You're going to be participating at the SHRM, HR convention. And what I want to ask about real quickly is what you can tell me in terms of what you'll be speaking about at the event, because you're actually going to be, your team's going to be there specifically. In terms of one area I was looking at was about artificial intelligence, generating guidelines to harmonize technology with humanity, and human-centric ways to rethink your workplace programs for increased connectivity. It's very interesting of the education you're offering there at Hub International in general. And just wanted to go in, just for those that might be interested in, you know, where they might have something where outside of cannabis, they might still look for other insurance help because they might be, you know, multi-sectored in what they're doing right now and their offerings. What can you tell me about some of the education that's being offered at an event like this and, you know, what the rest of your team at Hub International does?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're really proud of the growth of our employee benefits side of the business as well, to providing, you know, protection for your employees, right? Taking care of your employees is vital to growing your business. And in healthcare or real estate or transportation or cannabis, it's the most important factor to really kind of attract and retain employees, right? It's the name of the game. It's your most important asset, right? So as some industries like cannabis continue to evolve and scale, companies look to recruit and retain talent. And if you're cash strapped and you're not able to offer, you know, 10x a salary to attract some talent, what are some other ways that you can really continue to kind of support your employee force and keep them happy and really kind of grow with your company? And honestly, with risk mitigation strategies, when we talk about ergonomics and employee safety, people want to feel safe. They want to be in an environment that they are comfortable with, that they can thrive with, and really be, well-being at the forefront. And when you have an employer or a company that you work for that keeps that in front of mind, I think that it's a beautiful thing, and it's a harmony situation between, the people that you work with, your company, and how your business really thrives.
All right, so let's go into this study this report that was being brought out about understanding the market for cannabis insurance. First of all, they talk about that insurance regulators should also be informed of the emergence of on-site social consumption lounges. That's one part I wanted to go ahead and point out here for you. A few states have started issuing licenses for these establishments. On-site social cannabis lounge sites may operate similarly to bars where consumers would gather to socially consume cannabis at a place of business. And these businesses will face liability insurance issues akin to businesses serving alcohol like bars, breweries, and wineries. Have your team been taking on any particular clients that are operating cannabis consumption lounges? And are there any really obstacles that you're dealing with right now that you're helping them to untangle?
Yes, absolutely. As mentioned before, we are starting to see some inquiries about consumption lounges, and people are starting to build out business plans and think that it's a great idea, and rightfully so, to each their own. Really, we follow the standard of the state regulations at this point, right? If your state, wherever you may be, whether that's California, Florida, Nevada, Michigan, Illinois, as long as you are able to obtain a license and follow the rules and regulations to qualify for that license, and they are in fact issuing the responsibility of running a consumption lounge, then we can obtain insurance for you. And really, it's moving in parallel to where a lot of the insurance companies that we partner with are trying to understand which states and what the rules and regulations of that state are for these consumption lounges. Now, the insurance companies will follow suit, but they will also have their own set of underwriting criteria in order to provide insurance. So stuff like, will there be food served there? Will there be indoor smoking and consumption? Will there be alcohol served in relation to that? And a lot of these licenses that are being issued for consumption lounges, they are in fact exclusive of any kind of alcohol or liquor distribution as well. Now, are they checking for security and ID? How are they handling stuff where people are over consuming? And some of the nuances of, you know, whether they're allowed to bring their own product or where the product has to be purchased there. How can you tell if someone is, too intoxicated to be in a consumption lounge? A lot of these things are in a learning curve and a learning process right now, and we're all learning together. But I'm happy to say that we do have some of these consumption lounges that have been awarded in certain states, and we've provided insurance for them.
Now, what about the capacity of what these consumption lounges can have? The amount of people they can have in there, we're addressing any things like it might be to avoid any kind of fire code. the risks that are taken of, you know, being able to offer security and being able to manage large crowds in there, or, you know, what's being done in terms of, you know, what's provided for entertainment? Is there any other additional costs that are being considered as well, or any real changes to the coverage because of that?
Yeah, just as any other risk, whether it's a karaoke bar or a coffee shop, all of those factors are in place, right? Some of the examples that I used were kind of specific to cannabis and what some of the questions are about the unknown. But, you know, foot traffic, fire code, additional entertainment, security, that would be in any kind of industry that would be taken into consideration when you are providing insurance coverage. And these are some of the questions that no doubt our underwriters are going to be asking. And, you know, in addition to some cannabis specific questions about the unknown. So, you know, that is something of a standard of an underwriting process of where you have to understand all of the construction, occupancy, protection, and exposure of a certain risk. And then on top of that, the myriad of the unknown as far as something that is new like cannabis.
Now, the other thing that's very interesting to me, these are just a couple of things in the report that really just stood out to me. The other one is the possibility of interstate commerce. And I keep talking about that because there's been talk about this idea coming into place, because with all the states we have already that are now online for adult use and medical, and you have neighboring states that could really go ahead and do a lot of work if they were able to go ahead and take their seed to sale and be able to go and process it across state lines and have that allowed until legalization comes in for a federal level. The idea was obtaining insurance coverage for cannabis-related businesses is the complexity of limitations to interstate commerce hampering multi-state expansion. The current cannabis marketplaces are contained in individualized state jurisdictions without competition from other state marketplaces. There have been state legislative authorizations in California and Oregon to create legal cannabis interstate commerce through trade pacts with other states. However, these laws require congressional authorization or a memorandum from the DOJ, allowing for interstate transfers of cannabis products. Federal legalization was introduced in 2021 with the States Reform Act. The SRA would decriminalize cannabis at the federal level and deferring to state powers over prohibition and commercial regulation. So we've seen possible bills come into play that could take care of that. The States Reform Act was always something I thought that would work really well, because leaving this up to the states and allowing that interstate commerce would be great with federal government taking a step back. That would be where I'd prefer, but I know there's a part about decriminalization and probably some other areas in social equity that the States Reform Act probably does not address. But if we got to a point of interstate commerce, do you see that something that could possibly happen before legalization federally in some way, shape, or form of a bill, whether it's States Act, whether it's, you know, the MORE Act or whatever there might be? Is that something that's being considered? Is that something that's part of the expansion plan that you might have to consider here at the cannabis practice side of Hub International?
Yeah, I mean, it would be something that we are considering, you know, especially from a transportation perspective, where you're allowed to cross state lines and move in from one state to another, whether it's a neighboring one or across the country. I mean, it's something that I feel, and I'm the ultimate optimist always. So any conversation that's happening in Washington is good for our industry and good for everything to do with cannabis and insurance. And I don't see that happening yet. I think the interstate commerce is a really, or lack of interstate commerce is a real limitation for our cannabis clients and how their distribution is working, right? A lot of expansion into states are actually partnering with someone that already has an existing license in the state and really from the ground up, either manufacturing your product and your flower or whatever end result stock it is, within the state that you are. And what other industry is like that? You know, you're a chip manufacturer, or you make widgets, or you manufacture pianos. You're not going to have a manufacturing arm or a plant in every single state. You're going to pick one of the most accessible centralized states and ship across everything, right? And with cannabis, you can't do that. So there are a lot of limitations, and that is hindering a lot of the growth expansions. And that's where, again, I give a lot of credit to all of our friends and clients of the cannabis industry. They are extremely smart, creative, innovative individuals on how they're circumventing such a tight system and a restrictive system. And until federal legalization happens, where there is going to be a free flow of transportation across state lines, I think it's going to continue to be a challenge, especially when you're trying to move product from one area to the other.
It's a lot of options here. There's a lot of room for cannabis to grow. And that's the part where I'm wondering where if things are able to go and change up for insurance companies like yours, people are going to offer more coverage and obviously just pick more off the process to get some of those entangles, just the things that are kind of holding things up. Because I imagine, you know, any more freedoms that can be offered for insurance companies like yours to offer a full gamut of services. I mean, how much insurance coverage or how many different things are still left on the table that in the specialty practices side, you know, a conventional large company is not able to go ahead and have? Like, that's the thing I wanted to find out. What's the difference between what you offer to insurance coverage for a normal company, a mainstream company, as opposed to cannabis? What's specifically some of the areas that are still not covered yet that you're still waiting to go ahead and offer to cannabis companies down the line? What would be left?
Yeah, that's a great question. And first of all, let's start with what the types of coverages that are offered in general, right? They are significantly more expensive just because of the association of cannabis, right? So you're getting 5X, 6X premiums of any other traditional risk. Now that number is coming down, and we're proud of that. In the last few years, we've had more participants, and we've advocated for the industry, and we've negotiated rates to really, you know, save some premium money and expenses that are for insurance for our cannabis clients without sacrificing coverage. But there's still a lot more work to do. So some of the things that are still kind of hindrance or not available is adequate limits. So, you know, in any traditional real estate, gas station, commercial portfolio, you can get up to 100, 200, 500 million in TIB coverage, whereas cannabis and any one company will not get more than 50 to 100 million when it comes to property insurance. So adequate limits and those limits that are only offered in cannabis, it needs a lot of work, right? Other things as far as, you know, coverage for, let's say, crime and cyber are a lot more expensive in cannabis as well, and let alone the catastrophic coverage as well. Certain facilities that are in high wind zones, tornadoes, earthquake, fire zones, they're just not writing it in cannabis now because that CAT coverage is something of a monumental milestone loss. It is the coverage for, let's say, the ultimate kind of loss that anybody would have. And because of the uncomfortability, unfamiliarity with cannabis, some of those coverages are just still not available. And it's really challenging for us. Also, the volatility of the cannabis market is something that is a challenge for cannabis, for insurance companies to understand in cannabis, because the volatility will make sure that underwriters are a little bit worried about providing meaningful capacity in the space. So certain things like excise bonds, certain things like premium financing for companies, certain things like executive lines, and also, you know, the myriad of exclusions when it comes to having a cannabis occupant in, let's say, a strip mall or a real estate, you know, structured portfolio where, you know, there is mixed occupancy. That's still a very big challenge because, again, some of the larger insurance companies that provide, you know, real estate insurance coverage, you know, mainly some of the name brand ones that you heard, as soon as cannabis is mentioned as a little bit of an exposure within that building or within the confines of their real estate portfolio, they're not comfortable with it. And then they're going to non-renew. So there are a lot of coverages that are traditionally available, you know, such as product recall at a more decent price, you know, for things like manufacturing or food and beverage that are not available in cannabis. And, right. You know, lastly, not to mention all the gray areas of the Delta 8, the hemp bill, the farm bill. And then the main thing is that a lot of outdoor grows that are very sophisticated in nature that have, you know, risk mitigation strategies, fenced security, really well-run operations, even outdoor grows have been a big challenge of providing crop coverage as well. Insurance companies are very comfortable with indoor controlled environments when it comes to grow operations, but for outdoor grows, that's always been a challenge as well. And there's definitely an exposure there. You know, just to lastly round off everything, there is an environmental exposure when you're using certain chemicals, pesticides, nutrients, anything that you're using to grow cannabis or any other plant for that matter. But, you know, because of the price and price tag associated with any kind of environmental exposure and insurance program, that's also an area where we see that there is going to be definitely room for growth as far as providing coverage at a more competitive rate.
So, Jay, I really appreciate you taking time out. Quite an extensive conversation on insurance here for folks here on Blunt Business. And, you know, with some changes that have happened in the last 3 years. So I'm glad to go ahead and put those out there in front. Let's go ahead and prompt people to the website, hubinternational.com/cannabis. So you might want 30 seconds or so just to go ahead and let people know why they should become the Hub International and what they can do to work with your team.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Again, Hub is a top global brokerage when it comes to all lines of insurance, risk management, employee benefits, and retirement wealth planning. And we are by far the market share leader when it comes to cannabis and all those disciplines. So whether you need help with your business, whether you need help protecting it, whether you need help with your employees, you know, really, really make sure that you consider partnering with the experts, right? Make sure that when you're qualifying a vendor, that they care about the business as much as you do, because you've worked hard for it. And we want to be there every step of the way to help you grow as your business expands and you continue to kind of navigate the rough waters of cannabis. So again, Hub International, we are the experienced experts when it comes to all lines of business. And other than what we do best, we would love to partner with you in all aspects of your business. And so, you know, really a lot of the relationships that we have formed in this ecosystem of professional services, we can help out in all aspects of your business, again, other than what we do best. So hubinternational.com/cannabis. Make sure you partner with the experts so you can focus on growing.
Fantastic. Again, but here with Jay Verde, Chief Sales Officer for Specialty Practices at Hub International. Thanks again for being with us here on Blunt Business. Really appreciate you taking time out again.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me, and can't wait to come back.
All right. And listeners, thank you for listening as always. We'll talk to you next time.